Okay, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 9 of Scholarly Peers podcast. I'm your host, Sin Wong Chong from the University of Edinburgh, and today it's a very special episode for us because I'm recording live here with our guest today at the BIRA conference in Liverpool. And so today we have Dr. Yu Wei Xu to share with us his experience in journal peer review. So Yu Wei, do you mind introducing yourself briefly to our audience?
Thanks, Xin Wang. Hello, everyone. My name is Yu Wei, and I currently work at the University of Nottingham as an assistant professor. My research background is mainly in early childhood education and gender studies. Also, I hold several editorial roles that might be relevant in this context. I'm the co-editor for Children and Society Journal, and also an incoming editor for Pedagogy, Culture and Society Journal, and also associate editor for Teachers and Teaching Theory and Practice Journal, apart from, in addition to some other editorial board members and stuff. So yeah, that's it.
I think that's a very long list that you can't really remember even yourself, but yeah. I mean, that's an impressive record of peer review and editorial roles. Why have you become so interested or devoted to journal peer review?
For me, journal editing or peer review, for me, I think I regard it as a gatekeeper for knowledge. And there's a lot going on arguing that the dominance of knowledge or the more powerful knowledge in the current academia, in education or other areas, are Western-centric or Eurocentric. So for me, I feel if I am in a position to take up those roles and heavily or actively promote knowledge from different forms, different regions, that would be really helpful. So I see myself as in this kind of role by engaging with peer review and journal editing.
Okay, so I'm sure our audience is very interested in your experience in journal peer review. So can you share with us some unforgettable peer review experiences? And we would like to start with the author's side of the story.
The author's side of the story helps. So you know, when I published my first journal article, before that I got 2 desk rejections without any comment. So the unforgettable element then was because that was the first time I got some comments. So that was like, oh, finally, not a desk rejection, but they actually gave me comments. And although they were major comments, but still they were saying it is publishable as long as these and that are addressed. So that's like when you publish your first journal article and you didn't get rejected, desk rejected.
Right.
That was really unforgettable, I think.
So that was the first time you submitted a manuscript. Your first manuscript, right?
The second one.
Mm.
I think. Mm. The third, actually. Okay. I've got 2 more before this published one.
Right.
One was desk rejected by a journal without any comments.
Right.
And then the other with some comments, but
right,
somehow I feel it's difficult to address, so I didn't even go back to that. Then, yeah.
Would you mind telling us a little bit more about that first experience? Because I think a lot of our audience, they are doctoral students who are thinking about publishing their first manuscript. So did you, for example, did you do it yourself or with your supervisor? How did you select journals, or what was the whole process like?
I was very lucky because I got a mentor or also a co-author who supported that process. She isn't my supervisors, but she was someone I contacted that I wanted to do a PhD with her, but for funding reasons it didn't happen, but we still maintained a relationship. And before I started my PhD, we did a little pilot project together. So that first paper was from that little project. So I was very lucky to have her, who is a very experienced writer and professor in this field, giving me advice on selection of journals and how to write for journal articles and things. So that's very important. In terms of selecting journals, she has given me lots of advice. She's from Australia, so she suggested an Australian journal. But then, because last year Australia has changed some ethics policy, so you have to be very specific detailing which committee your research has been ethically approved, the ethical projector number and everything for any paper submitted to Australian journals. But because I did my project in China, by then we don't even have an ethics committee in any universities, not in the university I worked, so we didn't get ethical approval as such. And we explained that in the article, we followed ethical principles, but this isn't a thing in the Chinese context. But the journal wouldn't accept that, so we have to go to other journals. And then I came across this BASE, do you know, the British Association for International Comparative Education. And because that time I was the student rep for this association, and I knew they have a journal called Compare, so I said, why don't we try that one? And that's how we ended up submitting to that journal in this process. But yes, my first paper, I think I benefited a lot from this mentorship and support by this co-author.
Right, okay. Yeah. So now thinking about your reviewing experience, I'm sure you review a lot. Do you have any unforgettable experience? I mean, the word unforgettable, different guests interpret it differently. It could be very positive, it could be quite negative, it could be constructive, but any experience that stands out maybe with your experience as a peer reviewer?
One thing that always comes to my mind as a peer reviewer or journal editor, and that really immediately comes to my mind, is the insensitivity of many reviewers in many aspects. For example, assuming this person is not a native English speaker and giving explicit comments on, oh, this paper really needs improvement in language, blah, blah. Or assuming this is a PhD student saying something like, this was published, this, like, you really need to get a mentor or your supervisor to support you. So there are lots of reviewers making those assumptions, and those assumptions are reflected in peer review comments, which I really don't like and I object. But that's the thing immediately coming into my mind if you're talking about peer reviews. And I think that's something, being a peer reviewer really needs to be sensitive in this regard.
And so you talk about, as a reviewer, we have to be sensitive. And the example you just provided is about, you know, focusing on language alone, or mostly language, instead of you know, the content aspect of it. I wonder if there are other tips that you can share with peer reviewers when we construct a report. What should we focus on? And also, not just the content of the feedback, but also, you mentioned the tone, our general approach to giving feedback. Can you say something about
I think
this?
First off, it's just to not make any assumptions. I mean, it's okay to point out language issues, but you don't have to say this needs to be properly edited by a native English speaker. And funny enough, because sometimes those articles getting those comments are actually written by native English speakers. So you can see there's an English language issue that needs to be addressed, but you don't need the second part saying by a native English speaker, implying this is a second speaker writer or something. So no assumptions would be the first important tip I've emphasized. And then also, I mean, when I say sensitive, you can be constructive, you can be critical, but you need to think about, if you were the person reading those comments, how you feel. Especially if you do figure out that seems to be written by someone who are not native speakers, who are not experienced authors, try to be a little bit more sensitive in terms of the tone, as you say, like, be more encouraging rather than discouraging in the tones you write those those comments. And then the other thing I would say is be, I don't know how much it is necessary to be instrumental, but it would be helpful if you can, because I know reviewers, many of us are so busy, we get so many requests, but you don't want to see things that you think are helpful, but maybe the authors can never address, like, there might be some fundamental deficit in your data collection or something. If you don't think that's, if you're suggesting major revisions or minor revisions, then maybe that's not necessary. But if you're suggesting a rejection, that's fine. For me, I would think, like, if you think this paper is publishable, then your advice should be more instrumental, realistic, rather than saying something that the authors can never address. But speaking of that, that's the other side. As authors, please feel free to reject comments and clearly explain why. That's especially for maybe those less experienced. I think that's an important aspect to know. You are okay to say, no, I don't agree with this, or I can't do it, and give legitimate reasons of why, and the editors will look at it, and or even the reviewers will say, oh yes, I can be persuaded, and that makes sense to me, I agree. So feel free to reject comments.
Okay.
You don't have to respond to everyone.
Right, right. I would like to dwell on the point about reviewers' feedback for a little longer. So you mentioned there were instances where you see feedback it being not appropriate, not professional. As an editor, can you do something about it? Because I know there are editors who would edit out some unprofessional comments, whereas other people would say, no, that's the report by the reviewers, we have no right to edit anything.
Yeah.
So what's your take on it, or what's your practice?
For me, I will remove anything that's definitely unethical or not appropriate. Something like the what I mentioned about like being a native speaker,
right,
or something,
right.
I might delete that part, but I won't edit any other aspects. So, but most of the time I agree with what some of the editors have you mentioned have said, like you have to respect the reviewers' comments. It is what it is out there. So most of the time I won't change those, but I will add in my editor's response letter, like, this is what I think you could do, or this is what I think it would be helpful if you can, for example, respond to that, but it's not essential or it's not necessary if you don't feel comfortable or if you don't think that's needed, something like that. So adding some extra notes to the authors rather than editing the reviewers' reports itself.
I think that's a very good point, because it's also providing the authors with the editor's perspective, the editor's preference,
yeah,
that they don't have to kind of guess or think about whether the editor would reject their revisions or reject their rejection to revise, right? So I think that's a very good alternative to editing or changing or adding things to the reviewer's report. I would like to go on to ask you something about your journey to becoming involved in editorial roles, because you have an impressive track record on editorial boards as an associate editor, as editor of a number of journals. I wonder, as an early career researcher, I think you're still an early career researcher, how do you get those opportunities? Do you actively seek them, or actually, you know, things just happen?
I think first of all for me is to identify journals that are essential in my field, like the journals that are key in my field that I want to publish in, and I think I need to publish in, and then I will actively engage with those journals in ways, for example, I'm thinking like to publish in that journal first and to know about those journals. So these are the things I think are necessary. And then in terms of becoming or getting those editorial board members or editorships, there are multiple ways of doing that. I have to say, for some journals, it's very niche. It's about a closed network and the editors or the members will just approach people they know or they think have a fame in this field and just invite them to be on board, which sometimes it makes a sense, especially if they are reputable people. I mean, of course we want those to be on those journals, but in most of the cases, I disagree with this approach because I think it has to be fair, it has to be open to everybody, and it should be organic, as in a sense that you get new bloods and fresh insights and things. So that's what I think are important in the first place. And because of that, in my own, what I tried or how I become in those roles are, most of them are through open applications. So for example, to become the editor of Children's Society, we responded to an open call by the journal to look for editors. In that it says you can apply as an individual or as a team, and I've got advice from colleagues, more senior colleagues, saying it might be more helpful to apply as a group, because then one is already a team in place, because you don't want to work with people, co-editing a journal with people you don't necessarily know. So putting a team together would be nice. So that's how I applied for both journals that I'm currently editor for. So we have like four or five co-editors, and then those people are from my networks, and I paid particular attention to the diversity of those teams, like gender, career stage, topics, and locations. So both of those journals teams, I make sure they are Global South and Global North representation. So these are the kind of things which I think are important for journals, and therefore I go for those strategies, and that makes it, I think the journals might like it when you have this diversity in your editorial group. The other things I would suggest is also to start with editing special issues. So before I apply for any of those editors roles, I've started editing special issues for some journals. You can respond to open calls, or for some journals, if they don't have an open call, just email the editors or a special issue editor, like, this is a topic which we think fits with your journal, would you consider it or not? And if you're an early career researcher, maybe you can consider co-editing that special issue with more experienced supervisors or other scholars. That also helps. I think one of the immediate things for many fresh graduates would be to think about starting editing a special issue for a journal that is a key journal in your field.
That's very good advice. Thank you. So let's go to talk about something slightly not necessarily negative, but challenges or difficulties. Of course, you have an incredibly successful experience in peer review and editing, but I wonder whether you faced any challenge in the peer review process. I mean, both when you just started as a PhD student or even now.
I think now the most challenging thing is, of course, time. I think everyone would say that, because you receive so many requests and so many people are publishing. Time is really a difficult thing. Apart from that, especially when I first started, I think the most challenging aspect would be your confidence, and confidence relating to your expertise and relating to providing good peer review comments. So that's a big challenge, especially if it's about now if it's about topics that you don't have a very very close expertise in this, you know, it's because it's difficult to find reviewers, so sometimes you do get some of those. And because I'm interested, I will accept. So for the roles, they're challenging, but then I figure out, first of all, you are not the only reviewer, so there are others. And I know some journal editors deliberately do this if they are inviting someone who are relatively early career or less experienced reviewer. They will try to find another one which are more more experienced. So if you are reviewing in that regard, don't worry about the confidence things, like, because your opinion is just one of them or one of the many few. And there's also the editors there who will make another level of judgment. So I hope this will help with growing confidence. And also that might help by, so we're talking about challenge, right? Confidence, time. I think that's the most two challenges.
So a lot of the doctoral students, when they receive their first ever invitation, or they may never have received any invitation, but they're very eager to get involved in peer review. How do they start? Because you mentioned publishing with the journal, to know the journal better. So how about becoming a peer reviewer? What are the different routes that one can become a peer reviewer for journals?
To become a peer reviewer for journals, I think, I mean, of course, if you have published relevant articles in this topic, your name might emerge in the journal's suggested articles, or sometimes we Google and we particularly pay attention to recent years' publications. So that might be a channel where you get sourced to become a reviewer. Or I have to say, if it is also important to get your own online profile set up, like LinkedIn, Google Scholar, if possible, and the university website. That will help when we Google or when we try to find you. Or the other thing is just to email the journal. Some journals will have an ECR scheme to particularly welcome early career reviewers, like my journal, Children's Society, we have that scheme. Or some journals will just simply say we welcome people, and if you want to be a reviewer for us, please just feel free to email with your expertise and things. So that's also. Or the other thing is a recommendation by supervisors or other senior colleagues in the field. You know, you can tell them that you're actively looking for opportunities to review, to peer review. So sometimes if they feel they get those invitations, they may not have time, or they feel it's more suitable for you, they will forward that to you as an early career researcher. So those kind of things could all be possible to get reviewing opportunities. For your first one, I would say, did you ask me about how to start a first
year?
I think it's a mutual process. Sometimes, because you have published in this journal, you know what they want. By learning from the reviewers' comments of your article, or you haven't published yet, and you put forward your first review for this journal, actually it helps you to understand what you need to do when you submit your own first journal article. So they're both. It can be reciprocal. In both ways. So to start with the first one, first of all, like as I said, if you are an early career reviewer, don't feel like you are not good. And actually, to be honest, many reviewers' comments we receive are from early career researchers, perhaps because those more experienced ones are not so keen to provide detailed reports anymore, or they're busy, or because this is your first or second, you're still dedicated, feeling responsible, you have to provide a high quality report. So in that regard, feel confident because you are the best. based on the other things to choose is you don't have to be perfect. It's never perfect. Mm. Even the article being finally published, accepted and published, they are never a perfect article. It only relies on those two reviewers' comments and the editor's comments. So everyone has different perspectives, different expertise. So if this article is sent to a different reviewer, it might come out as a very different paper. Mm. So in that regard, you don't have to worry that you are offering bad comments. I don't think there will be bad comments. They are insensitive comments, of course, as I said. Mm. But it won't be bad. But it's something you think would fit. But there's never right or wrong. And as I said, the authors, the editors will make judgment on whether I take on your comments or not. So as long as you are sensitive and encouraging, that would be fine. And also you learn from the other reviewers, because not all of the journals do this, but most of the time you will get the final reviewer's report with all reviewers' comments in that. That will be an opportunity for you to learn by looking at what others have said, why they have said those, or the ways they write the report. Sometimes you find they are shit, not as good as yours, but sometimes you do learn from a very experienced and sensitive reviewers. Okay. So these could be some of the things I think would be helpful.
Yeah, that's very encouraging and I think very thorough response. My final question, just to conclude our conversation on a constructive note, what do you think are the supports that can be provided to doctoral students and early career researchers in terms of navigating the journal peer review process? I'm not just talking about universities, but maybe journals, publishers, learned societies like we're in with BIRA now. What can be done further or strengthened to help junior researchers?
I think a lot of journals are now running early career reviewer schemes. My journal is doing that. So watch out for those kind of reviewer schemes. I think more journals should do that. Usually those schemes would be, so for example, in my journal, we invite, we don't like judge whether you're accepted as a early career reviewer. We mostly is more based on capacity. We accept as many as we can, and then based on their CV and expertise, we will pair them up with a mentor who is a more experienced reviewer, and we send out reviewer invitations to those early career reviewers, but also copy in their mentor. And what happens is then the mentee will liaise with the mentor separately to discuss and get feedback before they formally submit the reviewer comments to the process. So I think more journals may want to do this, consider this kind of scheme to capacity building early career reviewers, peer reviewing experience and confidence. And the other things, perhaps workshops. I feel like a lot of those things, and podcasts as well, is to really unpack the process of journal editing and peer reviewing, what it is like, with lots of sharing of personal experiences and insights from different aspects or angles, rather than student or early career reviewer researchers not knowing what this process looks like. A lot of times when I tell, because I run many academic workshops, we did one together, right? When they realize what it looks like, what the process is, it's much easier to understand what they should write into a peer review comment report, or what they should write in their own journal. So I think more this kind of sharing workshops would be really helpful by journals, by learned societies, and by universities.
Right. Yeah. And I think just to plug in here, so I think BIRA's ECR network, it's doing quite a lot to support early career researchers. And in particular, I think this year we're having a number of webinars where journal editors are invited to talk about their own experiences. And I think the best approach, it's a narrative approach. I don't know whether you agree.
Yeah.
Instead of telling them that these are the steps, you know, or these are the different stages, I think early career researchers can benefit from stories and experiences of different people, even though we work under the same system.
Yeah.
We have very different experiences, and we can all learn from those experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. So I think that's very, very comprehensive and very constructive. Thank you again, Yue, for taking the time. I know you're extremely busy. You just had a lecture, and you have another thing going on later. So thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks, Ding Wang. And looking forward to hear more about the future podcast in this series. Thanks.
Thank you.